concludes our business executive lounge session. Today we speak to a lady who's been in the human capital consulting space for over 20 years. She's worked at large and small firms in this capacity, but has also spent her early part of her career as a history teacher. I'm joined on the line by Tamara Parker. She's the CEO of consulting firm Mercer South Africa. Thanks very much, Tamara, for joining us. Now tell us, where did you grow up and what was your educational path?
Interesting. I grew up in Cape Town, Nompumalolo, and I wasn't sure, like many young people, what I wanted to do when I, inverted commas, grow up.
Mm.
I ended up at university. My dad was a lecturer at UCT, and, you know, I didn't really have any other option, which is great in a way. But when I left university, I studied social science.
Yes.
And I wasn't sure what I was going to do next. And I ended up doing a higher diploma of education because, you know, my dad wanted me to have a profession. So I taught, I came up just to Johannesburg. I taught at a school called Bernarda Park High School, which was a really interesting school in the 1990s. It had been set up by Sacred Heart High School, and it was the first school in South Africa that had a non-racial student body, non-racial staff complement, a very interesting pioneering school. And I was there for 10 years and loved it. But the unfortunate thing I think about teaching is that, you know, it's very difficult to make a career and earn a salary. Unfortunately, teachers aren't paid well.
Yeah.
And so I ended up going back to school. I did an MBA at UCT and then got into consulting.
Excellent.
And that's what I've been doing pretty much ever since. Yeah.
Excellent. So tell us about your career journey in the human capital consultancy space.
I started with a small South African company called Resolve. It's unfortunate they no longer exist, but they were a fantastic group of people who taught me a lot about the human capital space. We did a lot of work in public sector, which I also really enjoyed because I felt like I was making a difference, a big difference, in departments and in state-owned entities. And from there, I went to Accenture, which obviously is a really fantastic learning environment.
Mm.
I was there for almost a decade. And then worked actually for as a human capital executive at an organization, and then got approached by Mercer. And that's how I ended up in human capital. So almost a little bit by chance.
So Mercer is a global consultancy and you're the South African head. What kind of work does your organization do?
Our organization looks at people holistically. I think that's the best way to describe it.
Mm.
So yes, we are a global organization. I think many HR consulting firms are concerned maybe about little small parts of a person's development, but we talk about health, wealth, and careers.
Mm.
So we want to be able to ensure that people are healthy in the workplace and that we're managing people's, you know, health and the way in which they're looking after themselves, wealth in terms of pension, retirement, financial wellness, and then the careers of people and in terms of how they build their careers within organizations and environments. That's the work we do.
So as a leader at Mercer, what are the key outcomes that you seek to drive?
We seek to drive, obviously, to create a presence in the market and to be able to help other organizations to improve the lives of their employees. And so largely what we do is we look at across the continent. We work in 40 countries across sub-Saharan Africa. We're interested in what's happening in those various economies, and that's part of what I'm driving. We are looking to understand the issues that various employees in different countries maybe are tackling.
Mm.
And then we're trying to find innovative solutions to solve those issues. And we work together with our fantastic global team of human capital experts to bring that best practice to the South African market.
Yeah. Given your ethos and, you know, you talk about being a holistic firm, a firm that looks at the holistic well-being of an employee. Of course, the COVID pandemic is very relevant then in that regard. And we know that it's shown all of us flames, creating a lot of uncertainty about the future for everybody. What lessons do you think corporates can take from this around how to nurture their human capital going forward?
Correct. So I think, you know, as most of we've always said, our motto has always been lead with empathy. And you can only be empathetic if you truly understand the needs of your employees. Now, we understand that many organizations have got thousands of employees, but there are ways, especially with digital technology, to keep in touch with what your employees are feeling and doing and how they're managing in the workplace. That has always been the case. But I think definitely the past couple of years with the pandemic has brought that into sharp focus. The need to understand what employees are going through. And it's not just from a, employee wellness point of view. We all know that we've had many employee burnouts. And in fact, the biggest worry for HR in 2021 is managing employee fatigue. So I think that looking after employees holistically means making sure that they've got money to survive through the month, that they're not spending all this money, but they're saving for the future. I think especially last year, you know, we had a net loss of over 1 million jobs, 1.3 million jobs. You know, it's being able to ensure that your employees are looking to the future and thinking about things exactly like that. What happens if I have a financial hiccup? You know, am I going to be able to survive?
Yes.
And then I just think that, you know, wellness has become a very important part of everyone's conversation and goes back to the empathy. Are we providing the right resources for our employees? Are we providing the right counseling and ability to look after our employees? What's really interesting from our Global Talent Trend study is how many organizations are training managers to recognize sort of mental illness problems.
Yes.
Or mental, yeah, because we're not trained to do that, right?
Yes, exactly.
We're trained to manage finance, not necessarily manage people. And so I think it's becoming more and more important.
Hence the holisticness, I understand.
Correct.
And then just to pick on something that you mentioned about worker fatigue, particularly in this era where a lot of office-based people are now working from home, you know, what with the COVID situation. How do organizations, you know, ensure that, you know, the balance is struck? Because what I've been hearing is that people are actually working longer hours because they're not having to bath and, well, we hope they bath, but they're not having to prepare to go to work, travel, etc. Yeah. So they're getting to their desk perhaps earlier, not necessarily having a proper lunch break where they go out. You know, they're more easily accessible and knocking off later in the day.
Absolutely. That is the biggest cause of employee fatigue, along with the fact that being on Zoom calls or being on team calls or whatever you're doing is actually way more exhausting than being in a room and meeting with people.
Yeah.
I think what we're asking employers to do is to manage the following things. You know, that time in the traffic that we all complained about,
yes,
is your time, is a kind of the bookends of your day. You know, it's a time of quietness on your way to the office where you're thinking about your day, and it's a time of reflection on the way home, and it really starts and closes your day. So we're asking employers to help with their employees to find those moments, right, to actually set aside half an hour at the beginning of the day before you start your day, where you get into your day, and half an hour at the end, which would be a normal day, where you close down your day. So I think that's one of the things we talk about. And then I think there's some clever ideas that we've heard around the world. So, for example, some organizations are introducing no Zoom days, right? So like every Wednesday, you're not allowed to schedule a Zoom call on that day, just to give employees a break from that. And then I think it's about, you know, we all need to, it's funny, one of the very interesting conversations we're having and one of the things that came out of our survey is the top three skills going forward that people are looking for, which is collaboration, self-management, and the ability to learn, right? But the self-management one for me is really important. We all need to be self-managed, right? That's the first thing.
Yes.
But the second thing is that even managers in organizations need to, as we said before, with empathy, you know, kind of set some rules around the way in which we engage. So you can't send emails after a certain time, or there's no phone calls at this time, or there's no Zoom on a particular day. And it only works if leaders are prepared to live their lives that way.
Yes.
If you have a leader that's going to send you an email at 9 p.m., then of course you never switch off, you know.
That's right.
So there should never be those expectations. We need to understand that looking after the health of our employees is the utmost thing we need to do right now, because if you lose your talent due to fatigue, you're not gaining anything, right?
Exactly.
You need to think big picture.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's leading by example, basically.
Correct.
So what are some of the future of work trends that you anticipate to develop post the pandemic?
Well, I think some of these were things that were already in development prior to the pandemic. So I think the pandemic has put those sharply in focus. So we've always known that digital and technology was going to change the nature of jobs, right? I mean, if we think globally, the numbers are staggering. I think about 1 billion jobs will be lost or will become redundant, which is almost one third of the jobs we have in the world because of technology. And I think there were many organizations which understood that they needed to become more technologically enabled and more digitally enabled, and it moved along that path to some degree, but not in too much of a hurry. So I think what we're seeing going forward is that organizations realize now that they really need to reskill. And I think what's interesting, if you think about government as the enabler for private sector job creation, which they've claimed through their public-private partnership, is making sure that we really understand the skills of the future and what we're going to require, right?
Yes.
Very good organizations are looking into the future and strategically planning their workforces. So saying that these jobs are going to start to disappear, but we're going to bring these jobs on, and therefore these workforces are the ones we need to focus on to reskill. Now, I think everyone knows we need to do it, but some organizations are just don't know where to start, right? And that's some of the stuff that we would do, for example, is just to help them. So I think that reskilling and being more technologically smart is very important. But I think what's interesting about South Africa, so, you know, our global report covers 54 countries.
Right.
And so it's six regions, basically. And all the other regions had reskilling as their top priority, with the exception of Africa, which had this reinventing sustainably. So I think there's also a big push in some organizations to think about, since we have the chance to kind of reinvent ourselves, what does that mean to be sustainable? How do we look at diversity, equity, and inclusion? How do we look at the work we do in communities?
Yes.
How do we look at the environment, you know, all this kind of ESG metrics?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we ensure that we can grow and be more sustainable? And I think, Mpumelelo, what's super interesting is that in the research, it showed that 75% of CEOs that have got ESG, environment, social, and governance metrics in their scorecards,
yes,
those organizations had 6% or greater growth compared to their peers.
Right.
So I think we can see that sustainability is becoming a very important part of our future. So I think skilling, sustainability, and then data, you know, we all know that data is obviously informs decisions.
Yes.
But it's also about, I think, at Mercer, we always ask the question of our clients, you know, are we using data ethically?
Mm-hmm.
You know, data is not about spying on people or, you know, trying to find out what it's about, saying to ourselves, it's interesting that very few women have used this particular health benefit. Maybe that health benefit is not appealing to women. What kind of health benefits are we putting in place that are specific to women around, you know, women's health? So using the data to come up with, you know, things that actually improve the employee experience.
That was Tamara Parker. She's the CEO of consulting firm Mercer South Africa.